The Lord will protect you on your journeys, whether going or coming, from now until forever from now. One of the most terrifying things in life is to be traveling and need help along the way. We're never, I think, more vulnerable than when we are in an unfamiliar place and need help, whether we are sick or have car trouble or have lost our way. We don't know anyone, no one knows us. And that may have been even truer in the days before trip insurance, AAA, GPS, language apps, and more that give us some sense of security in those unfamiliar places. Many years ago, in the days before we had cell phones, our family was traveling on a hot summer day, leaving Nebraska and headed towards southeast Iowa on Interstate 80. We had been to a Mennonite convention, then we had gone on to Colorado, and we're on our way home. Our car, an old Ford Taurus, had acted up on the way out to wherever we was. I think it was St. Louis. It was in St. Louis that we had car trouble, thought we had it fixed, but no, we did not have it fully fixed. So on I-80, the car stops on this 100-degree day. Since it's the days before cell phones, I said, well, what's the option here? I get out and walk to the nearest exit and get help. So I'm walking along and no more than 100 yards from the car when a Mercedes-Benz pulls off the road right in front of me, and a well-dressed young man backs up his car and wonders what's going on. I tell him, and this kind man had a cell phone, a novel thing, and he called AAA for us and then backed up further to the car and said, why don't you just start it? And so I just see if it starts. And so I got in, and sure enough, it started. And he said, I'll follow you as far as I can until I need to get off the interstate just to make sure your car's going to be okay, which he did. He was our angel, we call him. I'm sure to this day he has no idea, no remembrance of that experience, but we've never forgotten this act of love from a total stranger. Some of us may be fearful of any long-distance travel because we don't know what will happen. We don't want to be vulnerable. We don't want to be dependent on strangers or help when we need help along the way. Some of us may only travel if we have every detail planned out and all of our fears relieved. Some of us may feel we're too young or too old to travel. All of this may be true, but we are always, always on a journey of life, even when it is that we never get in an airplane or a car or a bus or a train or on a bicycle. Our first scripture reading for this second Sunday in Lent comes from Genesis 12 that Tim read, the story of Abram and Sarai. The call to leave the familiarity of their homeland and embark on a new journey to a new land. They have no AAA insurance, no GPS to guide them, no roadmap. Oh yes, remember those foldable paper road maps that were impossible once you had them all the way open to ever get folded again. They follow God's leading and began a new movement and a new people that God blesses and uses to bless the nations around them. In our second text from Psalm 121 is in a series of Psalms from 120 to 134 that are sometimes referred to as the Psalms of Ascent. The people going up to Jerusalem, geographically going up to Jerusalem, on a pilgrimage to go to worship. And scholars speculate that as people were traveling in family groups, that this psalm became a part of their liturgy. A poem for the journey that included a traveler's question, a confession, and then a priestly blessing. Here is a song that is sung as a way of traveling on the way with other worshipers. And this psalm opens with a question, perhaps asked by the worship leader, and a response, perhaps by the congregation, those traveling. I lift up my eyes to the hills. Where does my help come from? The opening question. And the travelers are looking up at the hills around them, and they're reminded to look up. Other psalms remind them to look up. Often in Isaiah and Jeremiah and other places, the people are invited to look up, perhaps because that sometimes their eyes were downcast because they were discouraged. But rather, the psalmist here, the one offering, says, look up. It's difficult to know what the psalmist lifts up his or her eyes and looks up to see. What do they see in these hills? Are they seeing the beauty of the hills, which we see, and which this past week Mary and I saw as we traveled through the Appalachian Mountains? Probably they're not seeing the beauty of the hills, because the rest of the psalm doesn't particularly flow that way. Rather, if they look up to the hills, they may see predators. They may also notice that in these hills, other people have built shrines to other gods. Other faith traditions have looked to the gods and have done sacrifices in those hills to placate their fearsome gods. And he asks, is this where my help comes from? And then the psalmist, I think, turns his or her gaze even higher to the heavens, to the sun, the Egyptian god, to the moon, the god of the Chaldeans, and the stars studied by the astrologers to discern their messages and their impact in the future. These were all attractive and visible gods, the sun, the moon, the stars, the hills, the shrines in the hills. Where does our help come from is a huge life question for all of us, for any journeyer. And the psalmist responds to his own question in Joshua-like fashion. As for me and my house, we remember and confess, my help comes from the Lord who made the hills. Eyes are being turned toward God, which then leads the psalmist toward thoughts of God. And I think, where do we find our help? We look to those higher places as well. Sometimes we look to climbing the corporate ladder, aspiring to higher places in our work or in our careers. Many times we look to the higher places of Capitol Hill to address societal ills, be it Washington or Moscow or Tokyo, Beijing. Huge numbers of people are starstruck by astronomical salaries of megastars, be they athletes or musicians, whomever. Worshippers are attracted to the huge numbers in the mega churches. And everyone's attracted to the huge numbers of the Dow that goes up and up and up, or our increasing value of our 401k or the NASDAQ index, as long as they're going up, unlike the last couple of weeks when they've been going down. Sure, the high places have their allures. They're places where many put their trust. But after considering all the options of the high places, modern or ancient, the psalmist takes us in another direction, to a God big enough to trust, and a God personal enough to care, both the macro and the micro, to a God who continues to invite us on the journey, asking us, like Abram and Sarai, to travel to new places yet unknown. And the psalmist seeks to reassure us in the midst of our journey, in the midst of those calls to go to new places, in the midst of coronavirus scares, the Lord will protect you on your journey, whether going or coming, from now until forever from now. My help comes from the Lord, the maker of the hills, the maker of the high places. Your protector won't fall asleep. No, Israel's protector never slumbers nor sleeps. A couple of years ago, as we were journeying back home from the West Coast, our flight was delayed. Somewhere we were traveling. And we arrived back into the Philadelphia airport well past midnight. Things were closed down, and it seemed pretty sleepy around there. But I was struck that there were still people around who were there to make sure our baggage got to the baggage claim area. There were still people in the vans picking up the passengers at the gates to take them to their cars. And while I got really grumpy at waiting 45 minutes for a ride to our car, I should have been thankful that there was someone awake at that hour of the night. The psalmist claims something like that for God. God never takes the night off. This God works 24/7, taking into him, herself, the whole world. God never slumbers nor sleeps. And it can be comforting to us at that 2 a.m. to know our God isn't sleeping, especially when we're in the situation of the psalmist, when we're on a journey, when we're on a difficult journey, when we're looking up to the higher place of the doctor or the financial advisor, whomever it might be, when we're looking for somewhere for help. And we're wondering, is there a God and does this God care? Asking that earnest, desperate question, is God there for me? Is God there for us? And this psalm can be one that we can come back to, where the psalmist gives the unqualified and firm, yes, there is a God, and that God is there for us. Now, some of us may wish that the psalmist were more carefully defining how God is there for us. And sometimes we may wonder in our modern mind, isn't this something of an exaggeration, perhaps only reckless hyperbole to say that God protects us from all evil, that God never takes time off from loving protection? And these are valid questions for us to ask. They're understandable. But they're usually not questions that we're asking when we're walking through the valley and when we need help. Financially vulnerable people who need help do not need a lecture on the positive and negative aspects of the economic system. No, they need help. They need money. When someone is going through a life-threatening illness, that person wants help. That person needs calm, confident, firm reassurance that God is not only love, but that God's love is for them. And that love needs a face. That face is yours, mine, ours. And that's what Psalm 121 is saying. God is our protector, our shade. The sun will not strike us by day, nor the moon by night. God will protect us on our journeys, whether going or coming, from now until forever from now. Note that the psalmist said that God is a helper, the one who is constantly there to give help. However, I think it's important to note that sometimes the help we receive is not always the help that we thought we had to have. And sometimes when we're suffering, we think we need something specific, and we find out that what we really needed was not what we thought we needed. And even when we feel nudged or forced to take some step into an unknown, we feel vulnerable. And yet, I think Tim's centering prayer practice this morning can help us to come back to that sense of the calm presence that we do not walk alone. God is with us. And we walk with friends who also seek to follow Jesus wherever it may lead us. You and our collective journey may not be one that involves getting up and moving to a new country. It may be as simple as getting up and moving across the room to engage a family member or friend in a conversation that involves sharing how much that person means to you, or revealing something of yourself that you haven't before. And as I look out on you, I know many of you, and maybe all of you, have taken steps that have involved risk, not knowing exactly where that step was going to take you. You've led nonprofit organizations into growth and change. You've led and served in the classroom, in the boardroom, in the office, in the clinic, here at the church, in your job, in your volunteer life, in your life, in your family. And some of us are now nearing or into retirement, and we are called to continue to stay open to where the Spirit may be leading us on the journey of life that we still have left on this earth. In a few minutes, you'll have the opportunity to write on a paper that was handed to you when you came in. Hopefully, all of you should have a sheet of paper that has footprints. Bob Moyer called it a footnote. Oh, Bob. As you see in the bulletin, you're invited to ask what the Spirit is saying to you right now about the next steps on your journey. And if you feel called to write what comes to your mind in the silence that will be given in a few minutes, or simply if nothing seems to be coming, just leave it blank to take it with you, to put it in a visible place where you'll see it in the next day and week. As a reminder, to be open to what might be shown to you as to what the journey is calling of you and what you need for the journey in the days and weeks ahead. I wonder if maybe one reason that we seek reassurance of God's providential care day and night in good times and in bad as we journey through life is that so we'll be ready to engage God's help at the end. Our hope in life and in death is that the same God who is so helpful to us day and night through thick and thin, through good times and bad, will help us and be with us to the end of our days here on earth. If along this way you've experienced God helping you, sometimes prodding you, at other times casting a protective shelter over your head, preserving you in your goings and your comings, then you are reassured in your final journey. You have hope in your last trip, assured that the God who helped you in life will also help you in death. May we all grow in confidence of a loving God who is with us on the journey of life. And may that confidence embolden us for new journeys yet to be revealed as we continue to be open to the still small voice of the one who travels with us. So I would say to all of us, bon voyage. And now I invite us into a time of silence, to write or simply to listen to what the Spirit might be saying to you.